Okay, so I'm going to talk about some recent work I've done with David Berenstein and Tao Liu on looking for Higgs decays to BB bar in natural Susie cascades. Okay, so brief overview of the talk. First, I'll do a brief overview of natural Susie. I'll talk about the simplified models we studied. I'll mention some related work on looking for Higgs to BB bar resonances. I'll go through our analysis procedures. I'll talk about our results and outline some directions for future work. Okay, so the motivation for this study is we would like to know the full details of the mechanism for mass generation for fermions. It seems an obvious thing to do to look for a resonance in Higgs decaying to pairs of B quarks. But this is usually considered challenging at the LHC because there are some large backgrounds. This can be overcome in the standard model by looking for boosted Higgs with using jet substructure methods. Our approach is that we shouldn't limit ourselves to these jet substructure methods. In fact, if we could do it more simply, that would be good. With well-motivated new physics, we can carry out this search for hadronic Higgs decays in a somewhat less boosted region without needing jet substructure at all. In our study, we consider simplified models in the context of natural supersymmetry, although our methods are not limited to that context. Okay, so natural supersymmetry. So in the MSSM, at tree level, there's a rough relation between the Z mass and Higgsino mass and soft Higgs masses. So these have to cancel against each other. So to avoid fine-tuning, we need to constrain the sizes of both these parameters. So we can place an upper bound on the mu parameter of this. Delta is the relative size of the radiative corrections to the Higgs mass. So this constrains us to have a mu parameter on the order of a few hundred GeV. Similarly, if we look at the radiative corrections to the soft Higgs masses, we see that the dominant contributions are given by third-generation squarks and gluonos. So really, we only need to keep these particles in the in the low energy spectrum. Everything else can be heavy, because they don't contribute to the radiative corrections, so we don't need to worry about them for purposes of fine-tuning. So we can completely forget about the first two generations of squarks. And we end up with a spectrum that looks like this. Natural supersymmetry below a TeV with just the third generation, Higgsinos and gluonos, and everything else pushed up to some higher scale. Okay, so the goal of our work is to look for Higgs decays. So we'd like to consider cascades, decay cascades of sparticles in which there is a Higgs present. So an obvious thing to do is look for stop decays. So here, a couple of features of my talk will overlap with Andy's. In particular, I'll mention them as I come to them. Okay, so there are two cascades we looked at, light stop and heavy stop decay. Lots of people consider light stop decays, where the light stop branches to a top and a neutralino. And moreover, this is the overlap with Andy's talk, the neutralino, which is Higgsino-like, branches to a Higgs. This is, in fact, a textbook case. You can look in a textbook about supersymmetry and see it mentioned. And of course, another case to look at is heavy stop decays, where the A terms give you a branching of the heavy stop to Higgs plus light stop. So here I've only drawn one branch, but we can have di-Higgs productions because we, in each case, of course, we have a whole other branch. So the thing to consider here is simplified models with sets of parameters such that the branchings to Higgs are large enough to provide a useful handle on Higgs searches. Okay, so here are the simplified models we consider. The masses of the low energy particles. In this case one is the case where Higgs is present in light stop decays, and case two is where the Higgs emerges from a heavy stop decay. And here are the spectra. Yes. Okay, so the explanation here is a simplified model. So we actually set the Higgs mass by hand and used a spectrum calculator to calculate all the branching ratios. No, it's not. This is just sort of a generic SUSY-like setup. And it's not even constrained to SUSY scenarios, which I'll mention later. Actually, so what's problematic is that to get large enough branching ratios to the Higgs, you need a large off-diagonal, sorry, small off-diagonal term in the stop mass matrix, because you want the stops to be aligned with the mass eigenstates to be aligned with the gauge eigenstates. So that that off-diagonal term is exactly what shows up in the quantum corrections to the Higgs mass. So you need that to be big. Yeah. Because there is competition in that. So for the easiest way to see this is in the second scenario, where the heavy stop branches to a light stop through the A term. Actually in both cases, there's competition with branching to a Z. The Z is always going to couple in a similar way. So you have to kind of tune the chiralities of the stops. Anyway. Other questions? Right, that's true. Yeah, this is true. This is exactly the reason we set the Higgs mass by hand and say additional things raise the Higgs mass. Sure, but not the MSSM. Right. Yes. Other questions?
You'd also have spot maintenance here.
Oh, yes, this is true. Yeah, this is actually a good point. This is sort of stitched up inside this branching ratio. Okay, so this is not a three-body decay. This is a there's an intermediate step before you get the Higgs. So there's a couple of channels that can occur in, and the spotum is lumped in there. Spotum at 600. Ah, requiring multiple B tags. So requiring multiple B tags in the final state. So if there's direct, are we thinking of the same? Yeah, right. We require at least four B tags. Right. Yeah. Oh, go. Other questions? Okay. All right. So, right. Okay. So, this is not the first search, obviously, to consider Higgs reconstruction in the hadronic channel. People are looking for this in associated production, just in the standard model. And in the context of new physics searches, sort of similar approaches have been taken by looking for high B-jet multiplicity in the final state. But these other searches typically use jet substructure techniques. And we want to see if there is another way to do that. So, okay, so a few quick words on our simulation framework. The spectrum calculator we used to get the spectra you saw two slides ago was SUSY-HIT, where we set the Higgs mass by hand, but used that input Higgs mass of 125 GeV to calculate all the branching fractions. And then we fed the spectrum from this to MadGraph and Pythia. We didn't do any detector simulation, but we did implement some basic smearing of the tracks and detector level acceptance cuts. We didn't simulate pileup, so if we did, it would impact the B-tagging efficiency and the measurement of missing energy, both of which are important for our study. So, and as for the B-tagging, we just used a parameterized method based on Monte Carlo truth. That has some dependence on the jet PT and angular distribution, or pseudorapidity, but asymptotes quickly to a 60% efficiency, which is a little pessimistic or a little conservative as far as efficiency goes. Okay, so important backgrounds. TTBB is a very important background because there are always four B jets, and this is exactly the B multiplicity requirement that we want to use. TT bar plus jets is less important. To get this to have four B tags, charms from top decays have to be fake tagged as Bs. So that requires the top state gate decay hadronically, which lowers the missing energy signatures. Similar story with four Bs plus jets. There's low missing energy and low HT compared to our SUSY events. There are SUSY backgrounds from events without Higgs. Largely, these fail our cuts, as I'll talk about in a minute. There are fewer jets for less spectacular SUSY cascades and fewer B tags. A really annoying background is combinatorics. So this is in fact dominant. Once we've imposed some event level cuts. Okay. If we so by way of comparison, the production rates for stops in our benchmarks are order picobonds to 10th of picobonds at 14 TeV. And this should be compared to the TT bar cross section, which we normalized at leading order to around 9 picobonds and included a K factor on top of that. So this is the size of the main background that we have to avoid. So how do we avoid it? Well, if we use multiple detagging, we can reduce this background rather efficiently. The reason for that is the extra Bs in these events typically come from gluon splitting. So they tend to be soft and collinear. So two things happen then. Either the jets from the two extra Bs are too soft to fail the minimum jet cutoff of the jet clustering algorithm, or they're so collinear that they're reconstructed as a single B jet. And here is a plot of the distribution of the angular separation and PT of the B jet pairs that come from the BB bar, the extra BB bars. So you can see they're soft and collinear, typically. Okay, so it's time to decide on event level cuts. First, we look at jet multiplicity and B jet multiplicity. So here I've plotted SUSY events and TT bar background, since it's the most important. And so there's some overlap, but a useful cut in both cases is to require 6 jets overall and 4 B tags. Further, we can cut on kinematics. So HT is useful. So we impose a cut in case 1 of 500 GeV and in case 2 of 650. And missing energy is useful. And again, as with HT, in each case, we impose a different cut. So I'll summarize those on the next slide. So for case 1 and case 2, the jet multiplicity requirements are the same, and then we impose different requirements on the kinematics. Okay, so here's the cut flow chart. So this is for 40 inverse van der Waals of simulated data at 14 TeV. These double entries for the third and fourth cuts for the standard model backgrounds are for the cuts for case 1 and the cuts for case 2, since they're different. Interesting features here. You can see that for the TTBB background, the second cut, the 4B jet requirement, is efficient at forbidding this background. And between case 1 and case 2, the total number of events is much higher in case 2 because here I've lumped all of the light sparticles together in this cut flow. So there are, in case 2, there are lots and lots of light stops. And those events get thrown away as we apply the 4B tag requirement. Okay, so now that we've decided which events we want to keep, we have to sift through them and try to reconstruct the Higgs out of the mess. So it would be great if the events were clean. This is a picture of a candidate Higgs to diphoton decay. But they're not clean. They're messy. This is a cartoon I drew of one of our events to sort of indicate how busy they are. So the little circles so this is a picture of the tracker. The little circles are individual tracks. Their size corresponds to their PT. The big circles, the big colored circles, are jet cones. The colored circles in the background are partons. And the red ones are Bs. So here there are 4 Bs. And the color of the jet cone corresponds to the ancestor particle, which decayed to make the jets. So here the blue jets come from Higgs decay, and the red jets come from top decay. So the task now is to pair the jets up and look for a resonance. Okay. So therein lies the problem. If we have four B jets, we have six pairs to choose from, and if there's only one Higgs in the event, there's only one pair that's correct. So this picture is an invariant mass distribution that you shouldn't take seriously. This is to indicate the magnitude of the combinatorial problem. So here, in every event, we've taken all possible combinations of all possible pairings of the jets and plotted their invariant mass. Of course, that means that these are correlated, so you shouldn't try to read any kind of statistical significance out of this. I've colored the contributions according to the ancestry of the B-jet pair. Blue comes from Higgs. This big green monster comes from incorrectly paired B-jets and Suzy events. So Higgs B paired with a top B, et cetera. And then the... Oh, they do and don't. Yeah, everything. Yeah, because even if you do have a Higgs in the event, if you pick the wrong pair, and that's part of this big green monster. The yellowish contribution is from the standard model background, and along the bottom I've drawn a replica of the Higgs resonance, and this will appear just to guide your eye in other plots. Okay, so how do we pick the right pair? Okay, so one thing we can do is to look at the jet pair PT distribution. Okay, so so a simple thing to do would be to just simply impose a cut on the B-jet pair PT, because there's this plot is of jet pair PTs from events that had a Higgs in them, and this distribution is the PT of wrongly paired B-jets, and this is correctly paired B-jets. So the correctly paired ones tend to be harder. It turns out that it's more effective to rank the B-jet pairs in every event according to PT. So this plot is a picture of the ranking from hardest to softest of B-jet pairs that fall inside the Higgs mass window. So this, we take the Higgs mass window to be from 100 GeV to 140 GeV. So for pairs falling inside that window, it's better to choose, you're more often correct when you choose the hardest or the highest, the hardest B-jet pair. The wrongly paired B-jets don't have any strong preference of where they're ranked. So these plots are sort of normalized so that the height of each of them is one. The point is to look at the shape, not the size. Same here. Okay, so great. We have a discriminating variable. It would be nice to have another one that's more independent of kinematics, that is more independent of the particular simplified model we've picked. So one such variable is color. One such type of variable is color flow. Pull is in fact designed to do exactly what we want to do: find dijets that come from a decaying color singlet. So this variable essentially gives you a measure of the energy gradient of hadronic radiation. So here is a picture of two B jets that arise from a Higgs decay, and you can see that the distribution of their showered millions and millions of times. And you can see that their energy gradients sort of point toward each other. Here are B jets that have not come from a color singlet, and they tend to hadronize away from each other. So if we compare, if we measure the angle of this jet pull vector, pointing kind of along this way, with the line that connects the two jets. For color singlets, that angle should be less than for color non-singlets. Okay. So there's a slight difference in the standard deviation of the pull angle between the harder and softer jet in a jet pair. And it would be nice to use all of the available color flow, all of the available pull information to use both pulls. So we put together a chi-squared-like variable as an effective pull angle. We measured the, we sort of put found a linear fit for the standard deviations as a function of PT for the pull angle and included them in this variable. Okay, so we play the same game that we played with PT. We look at the distribution of this effective pull angle, and we look at the distribution of rankings, now we've ranked the jet pairs from smallest pull angle to the largest. And we see the same type of distribution, correctly paired B jets tend to be higher ranked, and incorrectly paired ones have no preference. So we use them together. Given an event, we plot each jet pair in the ranking plane of PT and effective pull angle, and we see a noticeable difference. So this is a picture of correctly and incorrectly paired B jets inside the Higgs window, the Higgs mass window, and we see that correctly paired jets tend to concentrate in the lower corner, and incorrectly paired ones don't have any preference. So now we can cut. Take a triangular region and throw everything out. So only consider B jet pairs whose rankings put them inside this triangular region. Sure. Yeah. Okay. 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 So now we have a possibly useful way of picking the correct jet pair. It would be great if we could use multiple pairs per event, because if we, say, in an event, pick a jet which happens to land in this bin, sometimes this isn't the right pair. So it would be nice to be able to, if we miss the first one, scoop up the second or third one somehow. But the problem is that if we include multiple pairs in an event, they might be correlated. So one way to sort of avoid correlated jets, correlated jet pairs, is to require that their invariant masses be so far apart that they won't both land within the Higgs mass window. So this sort of simplifies the determination of the signal significance. So in our case, our Higgs mass window is 40 GeV wide, so we just treat that as one gigantic bin. And we choose multiple pairs in an event by taking the highest PT pair in this triangular region and allowing other pairs as long as their invariant mass differs from the first pair by more than 40 GeV and from all subsequent pairs by more than 40 GeV. Okay, and when we do that, here are the invariant mass distributions that we get. The color coding is the same. Here is the Higgs peak for case one and case two. You can see that this combinatorial problem is much more under control. This big green monster is much smaller. And here we've made no assumption of the location of the Higgs mass peak. We've only used, the only information that we've used at all about invariant mass is how wide we want to make the window. Yes? Sure. Oh, yeah, sure, no problem. Okay, so that requires peeking at this slide. Okay, so you have an event, you pair up your Bs, you rank them, you put them in this plane, and then consider only only pairs following the triangular region. Pick the hardest one first. Then walk through all the remaining pairs that fall in that triangular region and look at their invariant masses. And as long as the invariant mass of the subsequent pairs that you look through it differs by more than 40 GeV from the first pair you picked, include those, included. This is so that it forces them to land outside. This prevents them from two pairs from falling in the Higgs bin. This is to uncorrelate them. Right, so suppose we pick the first pair and it's way, way off. If the second pair is correct and happens to land in the Higgs bin, we get to keep it as long as it's at least a Higgs mass window away from the first pair we picked. Okay, yes? No. This is just statistics. Yeah. So even though there's a huge amount of TTBB events that you start off with, by the time you've applied all the cuts, you don't have very many left. So this is just fluctuation. Okay. Other questions? Yes. They're distinct. Anyone else? So here's the full cut flow plus pair choice results. So here I've just used the cut flow from before and appended different methods of choosing BJet pairs. So this row, I use only one method for choosing the pairs. That is, I rank them just by effective pole angle. And similarly, choose them just according to PT. And in the last row, I use the ranking plane. Okay. So in the TTBB events, this includes TTH. So some of the pairs will reconstruct the Higgs just from the standard model. Just like before. Yes. These four pairs reconstructed a Higgs within the mass window. No, sorry. These are all within the Higgs mass window from 100 to 140. Okay, and then the numbers are correct pair following that window plus incorrect pair following that window. Okay. Other questions? Okay. Right. So. Oh. Right. Okay. There's a lot of. Right, okay, sure. Okay, I'll walk through every number. Okay, so on the event level cuts, there are two separate sets of cuts we take for the first and second cases. That's what the slash separates, right? So this is TTBB background, for instance, subjected to the kinematic cuts of case one and case two. There are two different sets of cuts, right? Because we require different missing energy in HT. For each sort of brand of decay, each simplified model that we consider. Does that make sense? On top of that, when we go choose pairs, we want to actually look inside the Higgs mass window. So then we worry about whether the pairs have been chosen correctly or not. So we count correct pairs plus wrong pairs falling in the mass window. And then in the TTBB events, there is included TTH, so sometimes there is a correctly paired pair of BJets that comes from a Higgs, but from the standard model, not from a Suzy cascade. Is that better? Okay. All right. So I was going to say that this is not super illuminating to look at, but if you make pictures of the comparisons of the S over root B and signal to background ratios from those from the numbers in the previous table, it's a bit easier to look at. So each case, we can compare S over root B and S over B for various methods of choosing pairs, choosing according to pole angle rank, to PT rank, to the ranking plane method. And the last column is the sort of a naive way of picking a pair. You just pick the pair whose invariant mass is closest to 125 GeV, and that's it. And this is just to sort of compare the relative effectiveness if you of. So in these three columns, we don't pretend to know anything about the Higgs mass, but in the last one, we do. So the selling point here is that for both cases, the ranking plane method works pretty well, but it's comparable to the other methods of choosing the correct B pair. But the signal to background ratio is the highest for the ranking plane method. So this, again, is an illustration of using the ranking plane to chew through combinatorial background. Yes? The ultimate goal is to pick out the Higgs to BB bar in the SUSY scenario. But there is an easy way to see. This also provides an easy way to see SUSY. Yeah. Oh, we checked that they were not excluded ATV. So
not excluded with the current ATV.
Right.
Okay, how close are they to not being excluded once the full data set is analyzed?
Well,
that's
for yeah, it's 20. Yeah, it's for 25. Yeah. Okay. Did I fully answer your question, or even come close to it?
Oh.
No, this S over root B is for 14 TeV data and 40 inverse Van der Waals worth.
My question would be, you know, for the 14 TeV
right.
data, would these things be excluded by the normal searches?
Oh, yeah. It's very, yeah, this makes it very easy to kill these off. Yeah.
The moment when you discover the stuff before you really did it, no?
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, you can actually see that. Way back here. Yeah, if you just. Oh, sure.
Yeah, without the base in the normal sense. Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to drive at. Yeah.
Okay. So. Yeah. Okay. Does that answer all your questions? Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, anyone else? Okay. All right. Okay, so we're not constrained to be in natural SUSY at all here. There are related scenarios with similar features that are the important features of the events we've studied. There is something like a standard model Higgs that has a large branching to BB bar. There is something like a light top partner, which gives additional jets and B-jets. And there is something like a LSP to give us missing energy. And two common families of theories that can give us this, Randall-Sundrum models with KK parity or little Higgs models with T parity. So the parity gives you this long-lived neutral particle and top partners or KK modes give you the top partner. Okay, so a few things we can do. We've got all of these simulated events. We can unfold them and try to measure branching fractions, not just of the Higgs, but also of the stops. We can also explicitly apply the techniques that we've already applied to this Suzy-like scenario to Randall syndrome and little Higgs models. And okay, so summary. We started off wanting to get a handle on the mechanism for generation of fermion masses. So we want to see Higgs decaying to BD-bar. New physics cascades can help with this if they have high B-jet multiplicity and some missing energy. The combinatorial problem induced by the high B-jet multiplicity can be overcome with color flow and kinematics and some ranking strategies. So lastly, there is discovery potential for Higgs decaying in this channel inside of Suzy decays with less than a year of 14 TeV data. Okay, questions?